morning we come to the fifth in our Lent series that we've been looking at over the past few weeks, entitled Transformed by the Presence of Jesus. Now, some of the more observant among you might notice that if you've been taking notes at all, number four didn't exist, because last week we had Mothering Sunday when we didn't have a sermon. And I kind of happened to mention this to Steve afterwards, and he kind of said it was a slight error by him that he'd kind of missed that there'd be a family service and no sermon. But if you've been at the home groups, you will have followed last week's, which was that number four in the series was named by Jesus and looked at John 20. But we're at number five. It's entitled Faith and Jesus. So turn with me and we'll read Matthew 14, starting at verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they had climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." When they had crossed over, When they crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret, and when the men of that place recognized Jesus, they sent word to all the surrounding country. People brought all their sick to him and begged him to let the sick just touch the edge of his cloak, and all who touched him were healed. Forgive my hesitation then. I really have focused on the first section of that and not that last bit, but that's, you know, what God's laid on my heart. So that's, forgive my hesitation there. Let me just pray. Father, I offer you all that I have prepared, and I ask that you would take the words of my mouth and the thoughts that you've laid on my heart. Lord, transform them by your Spirit, that we might hear from you afresh this morning. Amen. Just wondering, anyone here tried walking on water? You've tried. In your success rate?
Bad.
Yeah, similar. I had to say I've also had a go. It wasn't intentional, however. I will point this out. I was on a geography field trip when I was about 16. We were doing a river survey in the middle of Epping Forest. And I realised one point in the morning I needed to get from one side of the river to the other. So I stepped off the bank. And as I did, I realised that the river was somewhat deeper than I'd expected. So kind of rather like the coyote in the old cartoons, off went the little legs, and then there was this moment of realisation and I knew I was going down. In went one leg, in went the other. It was a very high bank. I really hadn't judged where I was going. But then in a rather crazy attempt to not get wet, I tried to run through the water. Doesn't really work. I kind of got to the other side and had to kind of empty out my boots. Half a river's worth of water, I think. So I wasn't really successful in that. A relatively calm river in the middle of a forest, couldn't do it. But so how do we relate to Peter's experience? Now, we've just looked at the text, and the very first word that we read is immediately. Immediately after what? It's not a rhetorical question. I'm going to borrow Steve's thing for that. Immediately after what? What's just happened? Feeding of the 5,000. So there we have 12 men who've just been sort of dispatched off in a boat at the end of a long day where they've been ministering to thousands of people, feeding them and clearing up after them. Thousands who've eaten all the bread and fish and thrown all their little bits and leftovers all over the place. The disciples are charged with the thing of picking it all up again I've always wondered why. I mean, all of that was biodegradable anyway. There wasn't a food wrapper in sight, but still off they go, carting their baskets around and gathering all the bits up. And that would have been really exhausting. You know, we've got how many thousands of people? 5,000 men and women and children. That's an awful lot of tidying up. And as soon as they're done, Jesus says, get in a boat and row 8 miles across the other side of Galilee. So they all climb in and off they go. It's a lake that some of them as fishermen would have known really well. As I say, 8 miles is no mean feat to row, especially when you're tired and you've cleaned up after 5,000 people. And some. So off they head, leaving Jesus behind to dismiss the crowds. And maybe they were glad to go, tired as they were, even though a long journey lay ahead of them. So they journey, and it's hard work, because the wind picks up as darkness falls, and they struggle hard to row their boat in the right direction. And it must have been choppy out there. The text tells us the wind buffeted against them. In the similar story in John, it tells them the wind was strong and the water was rough. And then, just before dawn, in the darkness, maybe only lit by perhaps a little moonlight, and the waves were howling around with them, and the wind noise, and the waves are over the side of the boat maybe, and their muscles are straining against the oars, and their arms are tired, and all they want to do is get to the other side and rest. And at this point, they see a figure walking on the water. And not surprisingly, they're terrified. That's not normal. That's not their normal, what they're used to. They're not normally, you know, used to seeing people going for a wander about in the middle of a stormy lake. They've been trying to see the land ahead. They've rowed for hours in the darkness. Maybe they're imagining things. It says they thought he was a ghost, which is scary enough if you believe in that sort of thing. But then the figure speaks. And I think we kind of often read this and don't realise. It says the wind was howling around them. This figure spoke in a voice loud enough to be heard over the wind, over the noise of the waves. And the figure says, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. That's three emphatic statements. Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. As I looked at the text, it's a very important thing. For the sake of good English, a lot of the versions of the Bible translate the spoken words as it is I, or I'm here. But in the original Greek, and I'm reluctant to go back to that because it takes me, you know, I have to figure it out and look at all the dictionaries and everything to figure out what it actually says. But what Matthew recorded was, I am. Take courage. I am. Don't be afraid. Does that sound familiar? Just as God spoke to Moses from the burning bush, tell them the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. And as Jesus uses that phrase, he connects himself with that very same God, Yahweh, the great I am. Jesus is God, and that's why his presence should cause us to have courage. And as a consequence, we should not be afraid. So, Peter speaks up. Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. I struggled again with if. If, is it a question or is it a statement? People are divided. Does Peter know it was Jesus or not? Was the assertion of I am enough to convince him? Or does he doubt that it's really him? Some of the commentators suggested that Peter wasn't sure who the figure was. Maybe it's still too dark to see. Strange time of night. Some people are saying that fishermen often record sort of in those early hours. Sometimes you can see things that aren't really there, hear things that aren't really said. Or maybe it was just late and Peter was tired. But if Peter wanted to check if it really was Jesus, surely he could have asked something a tad more simple, like, what's my name? Or, what did we have for tea tonight? That would have been a good one. But other commentators have it that the if should perhaps be read more as since. Since it is you, tell me to come to you on the water. They suggest that Peter knew it was Jesus. Maybe he did recognise his voice. Maybe it was loud enough for him to hear. Maybe he was close enough to see him and recognised him. Either way, Peter somehow manages to ask Jesus, this figure on the water, to get him to do something impossible. If it's you, he says, then tell me to come to you. In other words, show me that I can do what you're doing. If it's you, then command me to do it. And Jesus says, come. Peter, in his usual impetuous mood, takes it as a read that this is Jesus and does exactly that. He has the courage to step out of the boat. In talking with people this week, someone suggested to me, I'm pretty sure it was possibly Julie when I was talking to her earlier on in the week, that she's often wondered how Peter got out of the boat. So I had a bit of a think about that. I thought, does he jump over the boat and land with confidence on the surface of the water and strive toward Jesus with confidence, while the poor boat, the disciples back in the boat, are kind of steadying it, having from this enormous leap of Peter jumping off the side? Or does he put one foot out, dipping his toe out like you do when you're not sure if the water's going to be cold or not? Or does he simply stand up and walk out? We don't know. But what we do know is that he did it, and he walks on water, just like Jesus is doing. Peter walks on water towards Jesus, in the waves, getting wet, watched by the other disciples, who must have been somewhat bemused by what was happening in front of them, particularly as they continue to steady that rocking boat, as it continues to rock in the water. They watch as one of their own steps out of a boat and walks towards Jesus across the surface of the water. But for Peter, being out of the boat on the water must have been somewhat different to sitting in it and looking at the waves. Maybe a bit like when we are inside in your house on a cold and windy night and you look out and you can see the trees waving and you can see the wind lashing at the windows. It's a whole different experience to actually go outside and stand in it. It's a whole wetter experience for a start. It's a whole different. And Peter leaves the security of the ship. That sturdy structure is no longer there, and Peter's out there on his own, on the water, doing the impossible. And maybe that's what caused him to sink, or start to sink, the realization that he was doing something that perhaps he shouldn't do, couldn't do. Some of you might have come across the book by John Ortberg, If You Want to Walk on Water, You've Got to Get Out of the Boat. I have to confess, I didn't read it this week, but flick through it. You know, basically he's kind of saying, he's inviting us to consider what potential we have when we step outside of our comfort zones. And Peter had potential. He started off fine. His faith only began to fail once he'd already started to do what we consider to be impossible. So how many of you have stepped out of the boat recently? I suppose many of you first thought, so what, me? I couldn't do anything like that. Because the kind of things maybe you've got in mind are perhaps heading off to mission to a far-flung country where poverty abounds, much like the films that some of us might have seen on Friday night during Comic Relief. Or as I read in my Bible readings recently about a woman who'd become a follower of Christ and had met opposition from the government of her nation. They'd hatched a plan to try and make her change her mind. They took her 5-year-old daughter from her under the sham charge that because she was a Christian, she was an unfit mother. All she had to do was deny Christ and she'd get her daughter back. And for 6 or 7 years, she's had to live with that enforced separation because she refuses to deny Christ. Or perhaps doing the impossible might be, I couldn't work with a homeless, maybe. Or I couldn't serve as a street pastor. Or I couldn't stand up the front and do what I'm doing. Even I think that sometimes. Are these the kind of things that we think of as impossible? Is that what stepping out of the boat really means? Doing the things that we think of that take us out of our ordinary lives, quotes, ordinary lives, out of our comfort zone? Because though we might consider these things to be impossible, with God we can do all things. Matthew 19:26, with God all things are possible. Mark 9:23, everything is possible for him who believes. Luke 18:27, what is impossible with men is possible with God. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through him who gives me strength. When I read about that woman, I was challenged. I thought, I'm not sure I could do that. No matter how much my daughters drive me crazy, I'm not sure I could do that. But I'd hope that if I was ever in that kind of situation, that God would enable me to. But I hope that he doesn't call me to that. But Peter walked on water. That thing that we think is impossible. But the truth is that he did it because God enabled him to. But there is one thing in life that is impossible. But just because we know it's impossible shouldn't mean we shouldn't try and do it. And what is that one thing? Becoming like Christ. I'm going to read a couple of verses from 1 Peter. 1 Peter 1, verse 15. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy, because I am holy. Each one of us who's made a personal commitment to God is already trying to do the impossible. For in a state, that statement of faith is the impossible challenge. Because we are all called to be holy. We're all called to become like Jesus. Probably something that's impossible this side of heaven. We can't be like Jesus. We can try to be like Jesus. We can come to him and offer him all that we are. And we can try. As we seek to live more Christ-like lives, the probability is, though, that we're going to fail. We are human after all. And we're going to doubt ourselves as well as God. But as we seek to become more like him, as we seek to live out our faith in our daily lives, at school, at work, in the supermarket queue, in the school playground, at the pub, in the traffic queues, wherever we are, even if it is on mission, wherever God's placed us, I think we are already attempting the impossible. We're attempting to live out our lives in such a way that draws other people to God. And we're called to live out our lives becoming more like Christ every day. To start our walk with God, we had to have faith. Just as Peter had faith in Jesus before he'd even stepped out of the boat. Because if Peter's faith had failed him, he wouldn't have even tried it in the first place. But Peter stepped out and walked towards Jesus and then faltered. Maybe you know how he felt. Maybe you remember learning how to ride a bike. That moment when you're pedaling away and you've got someone behind you and that guiding hand suddenly lets go and you realise you're flying forward on your own for the first time. And then your brain somewhere says, I'm riding a bike, I can't do this. And you fall off in a heap. And you sit there with grazed elbows and damaged pride and think, what on earth happened there? Or maybe you've tried talking to a group of people and you had all those eloquent words planned inside your head and you stand and realise that every eye is looking at you. I've had that a lot. Now. It happens. I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one to sit there and sort of during the prayer time and the words come in my mind and they're eloquent and they're wonderful and I open my mouth and out comes this torrent of, that wasn't what I wanted to say at all. Can't be the only one, can it? Peter falters and cries out, Lord, save me. Even as he doubts, he calls out to the one, the only one, who can save him. He doesn't call out to the disciples in the boat, row over here and come and get me. He calls out to Jesus. And Jesus does exactly that. He reaches down and catches hold of him. And then he speaks again. Words just for Peter's ears. As they're still out there on the water in the midst of the storm. And they're words that Peter perhaps doesn't really want to hear. You of little faith, why did you doubt? In the midst of the storm, Jesus, now firmly holding Peter aloft, he offers him a challenge. Why did you doubt? Peter's response isn't recorded. If he did reply, we don't know what he said. Perhaps he didn't say anything at all. But what is our response? Because surely we're also challenged by our own lack of faith. Because if Peter, who had enough faith to step out of a boat and walk on water, is having his faith questioned, where on earth does that leave us? We're told that if we have faith as big as a mustard seed, we can rearrange the landscape. Matthew 17:20 says, truly I, that's Jesus speaking, tell you, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. But a mustard seed is very, very small. And if Peter hasn't moved any mountains recently that could walk on water, surely our faith in comparison is minuscule, teeny-weeny, almost non-existent. Of course we believe in God. Of course we know he holds us in his hands. Of course we know that God is active and present in our lives and in the world. Don't we? Because we watch the news and terrible things happen and go on happening. There are countries at war. People are starving. Men are killed. Children are hurt. Unemployment rises, the recession continues, people get sick and people die. I was listening, I just caught part of Comic Relief on Friday, and Smithy was doing a kind of soliloquy thing, and just that one of the words, the phrases in the middle of what he said was, it's 25 years and nothing's changed. And that struck me. 25 years of comic relief, of people giving money, and nothing's changed. And I hear a friend of mine is sick and I pray, and they don't get well. And I know a friend hasn't got enough money and needs a job, and I pray, and still the rejection letters come in the post. And I keep losing my temper, and I pray, and nothing changes. Things keep making me mad, and I keep reacting to them. The storms continue all around me, and I cannot hear God's voice. I cannot see him acting, and I begin to doubt. I still have faith, but I also doubt, and that's the puzzle. Why do we doubt? Because the storms around us are big, and we are only small. I am easily overcome. I'm easily drowned. I am not in control. Despite my very best efforts to keep my life ordered and structured, still the unexpected happens. The unpleasant happens. The uncomfortable happens. And I'm afraid. And I doubt. But even though I doubt, I still have faith. Some faith. A little faith. Like Peter, we have a little faith, and that is infinitely better than no faith at all. Even if it doesn't seem like we have enough. Like Peter, we have faith. Like Peter, we doubt. We try and walk with Jesus and we fail. We walk a little bit and we sink. But we cry out to Jesus, Lord, save me. And he does. And he rescues us and rebukes us at the same time. Like the father of the boy healed from the unclean spirit, we too utter the words, I believe, help my unbelief. We don't do just only one or the other. We do both. Our faith and doubt aren't mutually exclusive. They exist in us together. And that's why we all so desperately need Jesus. Our fears and doubts may paralyze us, but they should also cause us to cry out to the only one who can help us, Jesus. If we could walk on water just fine, we wouldn't need Jesus. If walking on water was normal, if there was nothing that we couldn't do, nothing that was impossible, would we need Jesus? Our doubts and our fears remind us who we are. They remind us of our humanity and remind us that we are not in control. Jesus is. In our lives, our walk with Jesus, we will falter and fail and we will doubt. And we know that we can't save ourselves. Only Jesus can rescue us. With grace, but also with judgment. But never with rejection. He knows we'll mess things up. We'll make mistakes. We'll stop looking at him and look at our circumstances. Whatever makes up the towering impossible to cope with waves that surround us in our lives. And when our focus shifts away from him, we'll doubt him when we are within touching distance of him, like Peter. But he won't reject us. He will return us to the boat, knowing that the reason we were in the boat in the first place is because we believe, or we want to believe, and because we want to follow him regardless of our doubts. So he takes us to the boat and we clamber aboard, and all at once the storm about us dies. And in that silence, all of us in the boat together can do nothing but fall to our knees and worship the one who rescues, the one who can do the impossible, the one who called us in the first place and believes in us. Truly, you are the Son of God. Favourite preacher of mine, a well-known lady preacher in the States, Barbara Brown Taylor, once said, if there's a miracle worth considering in this story, then maybe it's not that Jesus could walk on water. After all, Jesus is God. And his ability to walk on water should be no more surprising than your or my ability to walk up the stairs. And the miracle is perhaps not that Peter managed the same trick for a moment or two. And when Peter sits in the boat once again, damp and perhaps a little embarrassed. And as the boat continues to bob around in the dead of that rather dark night, somehow in the midst of those humble surroundings, in the middle of nowhere, the disciples realized it was God's own Son in the boat with them. And so they worshipped him. This is the miracle, that Jesus is with us always. So we sang, Emmanuel, God with us. In all circumstances, whether we're in the boat or not, the great I am, our God, bigger than the universe, cares about you and you and you. Each one of us is important to him, small though we may be. God himself is interested in us. It is true that to walk on water requires us to leave the boat, to step out into the unknown and to trust and have faith. But it's also true that when we step out of the boat, we put ourselves in a position that we're also likely to encounter moments when those doubts arrive and we have to cry out to God. May those moments drive us closer to God. Our God, our faithful, loving, wonderful God, who no matter what our circumstances remains faithful and unchanging, always. Our God who is there for us, with us always, rescuing us when we need rescuing, encouraging us when we falter, lifting us up when we fall. And perhaps that is a good thing, to be reminded of our own frailty and our own inability to be in control of our own lives, that we need to depend on Him. So I encourage each one of us here, myself included, that whether we're doing something completely out of the ordinary or simply living our everyday lives, which I still think of as extraordinary when God's involved, as you and I seek to serve God in all that we do, may we not fail to recognise our need to be dependent on God to keep attempting the impossible. We need to grow more like Jesus every day.